Greetings, everyone, and welcome to The Law Hour, an editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about The Law Hour, an editorial review, please visit the webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you important information about law, about news, about current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Mogambo Guru newsletter when we come back. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." And that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. Public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper, things like stocks and bonds and Federal Reserve notes and credit cards and debt and usury. Well, back in 1965, Congress said that there is no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and clad coin and currency. And that's very true when we're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper, and a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper money over gold. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for all of us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver away from us for no good reason either. And that's because they knew, and they knew full well back in 1933, that in order to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away their gold and silver coin in order to take away the people's right to property and to destroy their property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain our property rights, regain our duties, regain our capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights, because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me teach you how to do just that. And that's in my business school. It's now on compact disc for adult home study. And if you'd like more information about my private business school, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, my business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and then send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, George Gordon .org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, this week we're taking a look at the newsletters and the newsletter business. We took a look at the International Forecaster with Bob Chapman. I've mentioned the Privateer a couple of times. I want to give you the address here for the Privateer. I've recommended to my students for years now three very important newsletters, three very important. Now, first of all, I put at the top of the list the International Forecaster, because it is so big. It's 30, 40 pages a week, and it doesn't cover just economics. It covers the whole broad panoply of things like geopolitics, crime, what's going on in the markets, not just in our markets, but what's going on in the markets and the marketplaces in Hong Kong, Singapore, Shanghai, Australia, New Zealand, Europe, the United States. It's probably the bellwether of newsletter writers. And second on the list, I put the Privateer. The Privateer comes out twice a month, and the address of the Privateer, 12 pages, very artfully written by a fellow by the name of William A.M. Buckler, P.O. Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, Australia. It's $180 a year in Australian money. I think that's about $130 a year in our money, if I remember. Somebody looked that up for me. And they've also got an email, and they've got a website. So why don't you visit their website? It's called The Privateer. www.the-privateer.com. So www.the-privateer.com. Or if you want to send them an email, that's capt@theprivateer.com. Easy enough to do, $180 Australian. I'm sure that if you call them and ask them, they'd probably tell you what the U.S. conversion rate is. Now, that's number two on the list. Number three on the list is Franklin Sanders. Franklin Sanders puts out an economic newsletter, kind of a homey, folksy kind of newsletter. Franklin is a farmer. And he's an old country boy. I'm not sure he was born on the farm or he's an old country boy from way back, but he is now. And he's smart enough to figure out that not only do we need a little gold and silver, but we also need wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. Because what are you going to do with all of your gold? Cast it to the bats and moles when there's nothing to buy with it? I remember a story in the Bible that talks about a famine. And this woman paid 50 shekels of silver, you know, around 30 ounces of silver, for a donkey head. Now, that's famine. And I'm an old-timer from World War II, and I can remember rationing. And the theory behind gold and silver is that we're going to take our gold and silver, and we'll have all the money, and the rest of you fools will just have worthless paper, and we'll be able to go into Walmart and trade our gold and silver for all those goodies from China. I'm not quite sure that that's the way that's going to work. We're facing trade war, and when trade war comes and the money system breaks down, the Chinese aren't going to be sending those big screen TVs and those SUVs and shoes for us to consume unless we've got money to pay for them like the Argentines. And probably the best guy that has his finger on the pulse of reality when it comes to talking about gold and silver coin and the practical application of it, and he actually puts out a book, I got to plug his book here, on how to use the ratio between gold and silver. You sell silver, and then when the ratio changes, you buy gold. And then when the ratio changes, you come back and buy silver and make 10% a year. You know, you've heard that old adage, you know, gold and silver doesn't make you any money. Well, not Franklin Sanders. Not Franklin Sanders. Sanders makes money when the prices of gold and silver change in their ratios. And he's written a book on that subject. And you can probably get a copy. Let me see if I can reach up here without tearing everything down. And get a copy here of Sanders' newsletter. Let me give you his name and number also, because it's my contention that Americans are being poorly served by the mainstream media and that you need a second opinion. And so Sanders here, he's got a phone number. It's 888-218-9226. The Money Changer, Post Office Box 178, West Point, Tennessee, 38486. Again, that's the Money Changer, Post Office Box 178, West Point, Tennessee, 38486. And phone number again here is 888-218-9226. Called the Money Changer, published by Franklin Sanders. And I don't know what the subscription price is. It isn't here on the paper itself. He talks about all kinds of things, but mainly it's an economics newsletter. So if you're sitting here concerned about stocks and bonds and gold and silver and the housing bubble and monetary indice, you just can't beat it. Now, the privateer, on the other hand, not only covers money, but also covers the historical and the geopolitical realities that are going on in the money place or in the marketplace around the world. And they also have an article, or they have a page on Australia, a page on Europe, a page on the United States, and so on. It's a little briefer, little more condensed, like Reader's Digest, than, let's say, the International Forecaster. The International Forecaster is a brief condensation like Reader's Digest, except that it covers a broader panoply of subject matter. Now, this takes us up to the Mogambo Guru that I'm reviewing right now. This guy, Mogambo, over here, he's pretty funny. These other guys are pretty serious and staid and sedate, you know, and Mogambo, his name is actually, he has a real name. His name is Daughty, D-A-U-G-H-T-Y. And he bills himself as the angriest man in economics. So he's probably got a degree probably has letters after his name. And his newsletter comes out on Kitco. Now, I don't know if this is the entire newsletter. I suspect that he probably publishes a newsletter that probably costs money. But you can get the Mogambo Guru on Kitco.com, and it's free. And Kitco publishes probably, 10, maybe more, 10, 15 newsletters or short articles that come from a plethora of other writers. And Mogambo cites a number of other sources in his weekly newsletter here on Kitco. For instance, in this newsletter, he's been citing Barron's and three or four other newsletter writers, and his main thrust is usually at inflation. This is the inflation man here. Mogambo, inflation fighter. Now, last time when we were talking about the Mogambo Guru newsletter, we were down here on page 3 of his latest issue. I think it's the latest one, published June 1st, 2005, and we're on about, what is today? Today, as I'm speaking to you, is Monday, June 6th, and there'll be a new Mogambo comes out about Wednesday, probably around the 8th, be my guess. And if you want it, just flip on to Kitco, KITCO.com, and then flip over here to Exclusive Commentaries. And then you'll find the Richard Doty Mogambo Guru. And when I stopped last night, we were talking about gold. And there's a common thread that goes through all of the conservative newsletters, and that is buy gold, buy silver, get out of paper, and especially dollars. Now, these people are investors. These people all invest in stocks and bonds, and they're all economists, and they're all pretty savvy when it comes to shorts and longs and puts and calls and all of the big words, you know, that come from college people, you know, with degrees after their names and have studied economics. And it's an in-depth review. Each one of these newsletters will take a subject matter, and they'll take a look at it in depth, and they'll say, you know, historically, this has never worked in the past. What makes us think it's going to work now? And so, for just dumb old country boys like myself, you know, I read and I watch Jim Lehrer, and I read U.S. News and World Report, and I'm listening to the radio, and I hear the mainstream banter, and that mainstream banter says the economy is growing. The president, every time I see him, he says the economy is right where it should be. On the other side of the coin, the conservative newsletter writers are telling us, no, when they tell us that inflation is running at 3%, it's running at 12. And then they cite the sources, and they point out, as I did to you, I think, here in the last program or two, did you notice the government's line is inflation is 3%. Maybe it's 3.5 if you really stretch it. That's the government line. That's what you hear on mainstream TV. Did you know that they measure that consumer? They measure inflation by the consumer price index. The consumer price index does not include housing. Doesn't include this 15% a year that house prices are going up. They don't count that as inflation. They don't measure gasoline prices and oil. I don't know what all they're measuring, but there's two key factors. You wouldn't have known that unless somebody spilled the beans and said, hey, did you know that the Consumer Price Index that comes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, from the United States Department of Labor, is skewered with false information? Did you know that? Now, if you knew that and you're satisfied with it and you like the numbers that come from the government, why don't you run with them? Some of the rest of us are sitting over here saying, you know, if these people are lying to us about these numbers and inflation's really worse than they're telling us, what does that mean for the future? How does that impact upon my General Motors stock and my Ford bonds that I'm holding that have now recently turned to junk status? Do I really want to be holding junk bonds at my age of 78? Should I be investing in something more conservative? Should I be buying gold and silver? And if so, why? Can you tell me why I should be buying gold and silver instead of General Motors junk bonds, which are now at bargain basement prices? Or why shouldn't I be investing in stocks, which are trading at the highest PE ratios in history? In fact, oftentimes these newsletter writers will compare statistically our position today with our position in 1929 before the last Great Depression, before the last great stock market bubble collapse, you know, when the world went into a worldwide depression. All right, now let me pick it up right here. We're talking about gold. This is the Mugambo Guru. I recommend him highly. I kind of like him. He's pretty funny. You know, he's pretty humorous. He's not one of these heavy duty kind of guys, you know, that's so morose the world is falling and or the sky is falling and you know, he's got a kind of a tongue in cheek, kind of a little lighter side to present. Now here's his story on gold. He says, for those of us like me who are anxiously awaiting for gold to shoot to the moon, Mike Swanson offers his three signs of a gold bottom. First off, he notes that the divergence between the XAU gold stock index and the gold, that is physical gold, that's the gold that you buy and you hold in your grubby little sweaty fist, the index and gold reached an extreme level. The action in gold stocks tends to lead the action in the metal itself. When gold stocks outperform gold, it has historically been bullish for both the stocks and the metal. However, when the stocks trade weaker than gold, a correction is usually near. Now, in particular, so I turn the page here. In particular, he monitors the XAU gold ratio. Now, when this ratio is rising, he writes, gold stocks are outperforming gold, and when it is falling, gold stocks are trading weaker than the metal, which is bearish. Now, more importantly, he notes that what many of these people don't know is that this divergence between the stocks and the metal has reached an extreme level today, which has marked important bottoms in gold and the gold stocks over the past 14 years. So my little antennae are quivering at the words important and bottom, which means I can go long and not have to go short anything, which is nice because I know that if I have to go short to make a profit, then I'm going to be squeezed by the sharks on Wall Street who will buy and buy and force the price up, squeezing my short position until blood squirts out my ears and I'll lose my big fat butt. And then my wife will be asking embarrassing questions like, where did all of the money go? And why are these people taking away our stereo? And did you just fart? Now, his second point about the bullish case for gold, which he cleverly labels as two, is that commercial futures traders are covering short positions, and this is important. It's important because during the past 5 years, important bottoms in the gold market have been made when the commercials have been net short 40 to 60K, that's 40 to 60,000 contracts. Again, with the important bottom thing, are you as intrigued as I am? Now, his third and final point is that gold is still hanging in there despite rampant manipulation by the central bankers, which he characterizes as number three, major support levels have held. Now, Bob Bauman, who is the editor of the A Letter, asks an important question when he writes, quote, we ask again, does anybody in America care that freedom, liberty, and privacy are being diluted, diminished, and destroyed? Now, we raise this question because of the deafening silence and near total non-reaction of the public and the news media concerning the pending consideration of the Patriot Act in the U.S. Senate, where the bill was marked up in secret. Next week, debate begins on this legislation. The Patriot Act, which gives the FBI and other police agencies unprecedented monitoring powers over us all, was approved only weeks after the terrorist attacks on September the 11th, 2001. The 342-page law passed sight unseen, give the police the unchecked ability to conduct internet surveillance without a court order, secretly to search homes and offices without notifying the owner, and to spy on bank and other financial accounts, and freeze cash almost at will. I'm going to pause here, Mr. Magombo, because when I see law, and this being a law school, my little antennae quiver, and I take a look at that and I say, you know, boys and girls, the police state over the past 5,000 years is the norm. That's the normal state of affairs. Mankind has been living in a police state for the last 5,000 years. And why is that? It's because man normally loves direction and authority. Just take a look at the Germans during World War, well, in the lead-up before World War II when they elected Adolf Hitler. Remember, Adolf Hitler was elected. Did you know that? He wasn't elected once. He was elected twice. Twice the German people elected him. Now look, you people elected George Bush, and you people elected those people that are in the Senate and the House of Representatives that are passing this type of legislation. Now, I don't know, maybe it hasn't occurred to us, but the people of America want somebody to tell them when to get up in the morning, when to go to bed at night, and what to do in between. And that's normal. Freedom demands responsibility. Freedom requires that you be responsible for your own actions. People who buy insurance policies don't want to be responsible for their own actions. That's why you carry auto liability insurance. You don't want to be responsible for the damages that you cause. You want to practice strict liability as opposed to limited liability. Well, insurance is limited liability. And if somebody wanted to practice strict liability, they'd be responsible for their own actions and they wouldn't carry insurance. I mean, I'm just telling you that that's the way the law works. I didn't write it and I didn't make it that way. I'm just telling you that's the way the game is played. Now, you and I are responsible for our own life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Now, if we want to turn that over to government, and George Bush came to us and said, I'm here to protect the American people. And I said, well, don't protect me, George. Get the hell out of my life. I don't want you over here protecting my farm. Let the terrorists come. I'll take care of the terrorists myself. Little Georgie Gordon will take care of all the terrorists that want to attack Georgie Gordon. But the people of America said, no, we can't defend ourselves against these terrorists. We got to have the government do it for us. And the same thing has happened, boys and girls, with welfare. You know, you have a life, and God requires that you feed, clothe, and house yourself, your family. You want to have a wife, you got to feed and clothe and house her also. And then one day the government came to you and says, oh my God, that's too much work for you. You can't take on responsibilities like that. Let the government take on the responsibility of welfare. Let's not practice patriarchal family. Let's practice welfare, socialization. And let's have unemployment insurance, workman's compensation, social security, unemployment insurance, and all of these welfare benefits. Let's have public school. Let's practice the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. Let's have a central bank. Let's practice the 5th plank to the Communist Manifesto. Let's have an income tax to pay for it all. Let's practice the 2nd plank to the Communist Manifesto. So when I read somebody's newsletter and I see a paragraph and it says, oh my God, look at what they're doing to us. Why, they're passing the Patriot Act. Oh my God, that's what everybody wants. Nobody wants to be responsible for their own defense. Nobody wants to be responsible for their own actions. Well, there's a couple of us out here, you know, that are kind of on the lunatic fringe, you know, that are out here. They call us right-wing reactionary conservative fanatics. There's two or three of us left out here. Now, Magombo goes on over and he says the answer is no. Nobody cares. I agree. Nobody cares about the Patriot Act, Homeland Security. When you walk into the airport and somebody says, bend over, we want to look up your ass, everybody bends over. I quit flying. I don't want anybody looking up my butt. So I don't fly on airplanes anymore. And I said, you know, it's got an economic consequence. 5 million foreigners that should be coming to the United States that were coming over here prior to 9/11 aren't coming over here. No, that's 5 million tourists. You know, the reason the airlines are in financial trouble is because they don't have enough customers. Anybody ever been able to figure that out? When you got a business and you're losing money and you're not able to pay the payroll or make ends meet or pay your bills, it's because you don't have enough customers or you don't have high enough prices. Now, evidently, the prices are high enough because all of the other airlines in the world are just doing fine. Singapore Airlines and Korea Airlines and Japan Airlines, they're all doing fine. With the price structure the way it is and flying airplanes, you don't hear anybody filing for bankruptcy in Japan Airlines or Korean Airlines. Now, do you? They seem to be making it all right. The problem seems to be over here in the United States. And they got a good point there because George Gordon won't fly. And there's 5 million foreigners that won't fly. And there's a lot of other Americans that won't fly until they get their heads screwed on straight. You know, if I walked into Walmart and they said, here, bend over, we want to look up your butt, how many people would go to Walmart? Here, we want to search you before you come into this store over here. How many people would go into Walmart? Well, I'm sure that a lot of people would. Most people don't care about their privacy. Most people don't care about the Patriot Act. But I'll guarantee you this, I wouldn't go back. So they lose my business. And I'll bet you there's a bunch of the rest of us out here, they lose their business too. Now he goes on to say the answer is no, nobody cares, nobody mistrusts the government anymore. But they will care one day, and nobody will trust the government ever again. And then people will scratch around for some protection from the government, and they will rediscover the Constitution, and they'll read it, and they'll be outraged, and they'll throw all present and former government elected and appointed officials in jail for life, and desecrate the graves of those previous government elected and appointed officials who took the coward's way out and died before we could get our hands around their nasty little throats. I think that's wishful thinking. I think Americans have been dumbed down to such a degree today that you couldn't find the Constitution with both hands at high noon with a road map. I don't think the average American has a clue as to what is contained in the Constitution. At least that's my observation. Now, there's another thing I wanted to make an observation of here, and I think I'll wait until after the break, and I'll come back, and I'm going to tell you about the protocol here, the sixth protocol, because Mugambo here strikes a chord. He's talking about gold shooting to the moon. There's got to be a reason. You know, all of the conservative writers are waiting for the great collapse, the great political event where this insane monetary policy that's been going on now for 75 years or 80 or 90 years, if you go back to 1913 with the Federal Reserve Act, has got to come to an end. And they've been predicting this end to the Federal Reserve, this end to the monetary insanity for the last 30, 40 years that I know of. And it hasn't happened yet. Guys like Paul Volcker come in with this miracle savior called high inflation rates and straightened out the debacle of the 1970s. And then we went through the 1980s and had a recession. And then along comes Alan Greenspan and inflates the balloon again and carries us through the roaring 90s. And then we have another recession in 2000. Here comes Alan to the rescue again by inflating. And at some point in time, this isn't going to work. I mean, deep down inside, I think, hell, even Alan Greenspan knows that at some point in time, it isn't going to work. But we're like a gambler at the crap table. As long as we got 20 bucks in front of us, we're going to be playing. No matter how much we've lost. Do you know we lost $7 trillion, boys and girls? We Americans lost $7 trillion in the stock market in 2000. Do you remember that? What in the hell has that taught anybody? They're all back in the stock market again, aren't you? We've been through 4 housing bubbles over the last 40 or 50 years. That hasn't stopped the housing insanity now, has it? I mean, come on, guys. Now, pay attention here. As proof of the incompetence and treason of Congress, they passed the Patriot Act, a piece of nightmarish Orwellian horror that they did not even read And that guts the whole purpose of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And that's why America is doomed. It is doomed because it deserves to die. And it deserves to die because Americans acted like morons when they voted and voted and voted for the jackasses that we have and have had in our Congresses and who appointed the jackasses that we have and have had on the Supreme Court. Ah, Mr. Mugambo. So what you're saying in effect is, we are the proximate cause of our own injury. It's a legal term. Yes, that's what I've been saying here on the air for years. Boys and girls, you and I are the proximate cause of our own injury. We have consequences that are derived from our actions. We voted for George Bush, and now look what we've got. Now, we had a choice. In the last election, we had a choice between George Bush, the skull and bones witchcraft practitioner, or John Kerry, the skull and bones witchcraft practitioner. It has not occurred to Americans to vote out Republicans and Democrats and to replace them with something else. Something else. I don't know what you ought to replace them with, but it's pretty obvious that what you've got doesn't work and it ought to be changed, but we don't know what it is that we want to change it to. So Mr. Mugambo, he's complaining about that. He says, my God, we deserve what's coming. And I couldn't agree more. I agree. And it's coming. The Roman Empire collapsed. The Egyptian Empire collapsed. The Assyrian and Babylonian and Greek and Sparta and Athens and you just name it, including Hitler's Third Reich, they all collapsed. They all had a cause and effect relationship. Edward Gibbon wrote a book back in 1776, I think it was, called The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. Great big thick thingy over here. In fact, it comes in three volumes, I think. I read that when I was about 16 or 18 years old. And I was shocked. There was five causes for the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. All of those causes have been in full force and effect since I was a kid. 16 years old, reading Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. All of my life, I have been preparing for the destruction, the collapse, the inevitable end to the United States of America. Why? Well, because it's historical. It's the way it's always been. And I'm just betting on history, that's all. Hey, we got to take a break here. It's the halfway point in the program, and I've got to give you a couple of reminders here to satisfy the Federal Communications Commission and the advertisers and sponsors who are by now pulling their hair out wondering, my God, will this lunatic ever shut up? So let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals, but by prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. And that can be accessed through my website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package, so to order yours, just call the Law School direct, 417-273-4967, and order it. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And then, finally, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call the Law School direct 417-273-4967. All right, today we're reviewing the Mugambo Guru newsletter published on Kitco's website. That's KITCO, kitco.com. It's an easy one. www.kitco.com. And then I guess you go over here to exclusive commentaries. Now, I'm kind of computer illiterate, so I rely upon my staff over here. They just put this on my desk, and I'm giving you the best information I can get. If you can't find it and you have a problem, call the law school and ask for Dirk, and Dirk will tell you how to get it. All right, Mr. Magombo, let me share with you a little something here that maybe you had never heard of or hadn't thought of. And it's called The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, published by Henry Ford. Henry Ford, the car maker, back in 1920, he bought a newspaper and he said, well, let me tell you a little something about international geopolitics that's going on. Now, for thousands of years, and I'll just share with you out there in radio land, for thousands of years, there has been what's called court intrigue. Court intrigue. We're not talking about now the U.S. District Court. We're talking about the Oval Office. And it doesn't make any difference if you're talking about the Oval Office in Washington, D.C., or number 10 Downing Street, or the Kremlin, or wherever you're located. It could have been Solomon 3,000 years ago. Holding court. It's the political aspect of trade, commerce, business, and industry. During our revolutionary period, it was the British East India Tea Company. Today, it's lobbyists and lobbying. I mean, it's always been this way, boys and girls. There's nothing changed. The business people go to the government politicians and they say, we will grease your grubby, greedy palms with gold, but enact this law for us. And so government enacts laws for the people who bribe them. Now, in America, bribery is against the law. So we don't have bribery here. We have campaign contributions. Can you follow that? Okay, now as long as you understand that bribery in this country is illegal, campaign contributions are legal, and that's the way we do that. And we call that lobbying. And so we have thousands of these institutions in Washington, D.C., and in our state capitals, and they're in there talking to our politicians who enact laws that benefit these special interest groups. Now, in political science, we call this fascism. Fascism. And that's where business runs the country. And that's where you are today. Business runs the country. I guess that's the way people want it. I'm not complaining about it. I can live here in the United States of America, and I can make a good living and do my thing over here in spite of the fact that we have this fascist government. Now, the people lived through the Stalinist era, the Lenin era, the Gorbachev era. They lived through the communist regimes of Eastern Europe, and most of those people survived. They're still there. The Romanians are still there. The Germans are still there. Now, life isn't nearly as easy. It's not nearly as good under communism as it is under capitalism. But, you know, people have to learn. And that's where we are today. And we're waiting for, and we're about to experience, a major political, economic catastrophe worldwide. And it was spelled out in the sixth protocol of the Learned Elders of Zion in 1884. Let me read it to you. Where it says, we shall soon begin to establish huge monopolies, colossal reservoirs of wealth, upon which even the big Gentile properties will be dependent to such an extent that they will all fall together with the government credit on the day following the political catastrophe. Period. Did you hear that? Let me read it to you one more time here, boys and girls, in case it went over your head. 1884. Henry Ford wrote this in 1920. He reported to you. He told you. He said, now listen, boys and girls, there's some bad people out there that have the ear of the government. These are bad people. We call them the Illuminati. We call them the Committee of 300. We call these the insiders. We call them the elite, depending upon which newsletter you're reading. Now, these people are the movers and shakers. These are the Warren Buffetts and the Bill Gates and the Queen Elizabeths and the George Bushes. These people, the Henry Kissingers and so on, these are the people that attend the Bilderbergers meetings. You know, the Rockefellers and the Harrimans and, you know, all the people in the world that count. Not George Gordon or Doughty or Chapman or some right-wing radical lunatic fringers out here. I mean, the people that count are the people that have all the money. They're called the elite. They're spoken of very poorly in Bible prophecy. The Bible talks about this period of time also. In the protocols, they call it the sixth protocol. In Bible prophecy, it's called Jacob's Trouble, the Great Tribulation. Some people call it the end of the world. It's a little bit off point, but then, you know, people have different labels and different names that they want to hang on historical events that they anticipate. Some people call it the rapture. Religious people, you know, get really excited about the rapture and how they're going to be raptured away. And this guy, Mogambo and George Gordon, are going to be left here on planet Earth, and we're going to face the consequences. But all the good people are going to be raptured away to heaven and spared all of this grief and sorrow. And so the Mogambo is over here saving gold. See? And he's writing newsletters, and he's telling you people, you know, you're nuts over here for electing these crazy lunatics who are taking away your freedoms. And I'm just an observer, you know, and a reporter, and I come along and say, well, hell, Mogambo has been this way, you know, forever. Can you point to a period in history when we've had freedom? Well, I can only point to three. We had freedom in Israel under David and Solomon. David and Solomon. And then we had a short period of 38 years when we had some freedom under a king named Josiah. God was going to destroy the kingdom, and he said, well, Josiah, because you've done this thing, he did one good thing. He done something good. And God said, I'm not going to destroy the kingdom during your lifetime. I'll wait until you die. That was the good news. The bad news is you're only going to live 38 more years. All right, that's two. And then this brief experiment in democracy or Republican form of government from 1776 to today. Now, can you point to any other period in history where freedom and liberty, individual rights, property rights, have been practiced by a nation, civilization, empire, etc. over the last 5,000 years? Can you point to any? I'm not saying that there aren't any, but they're pretty damn rare. The Roman Empire was not the pinnacle of freedom and property rights. I mean, it was a great place for a select few, but it was a hellhole for the most. And that's the way most of the world has been most of the time. China's a great place for a minority of elitists and aristocrats in China. But for the average Joe Six-Pack Chinaman out there, you know, life is hell. But then, hell, it's been that way, you know, forever. So bear in mind now that there's a plan that has been invoked in 1884. And these elitists that John Chapman calls the Committee of 300 and Bob Chapman calls the elitists and Henry Ford called the Zionists and, you know, I mean, hang a label on them. But there are people out there, you know, like Henry Kissinger. He's one of them. He was just at the Bilderberger meeting. I read you that from Chapman's newsletter. And the Bushes and so on. These people, you know, count. And these people are pulling the strings. And these people enact the laws. And these people manipulate the stock market and the gold market and so on. Now, out of all of this, what are you and I, Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife, what is it that we could be doing today that would make life easier for us in this transition period between freedom and property and property rights and a totalitarian New World Order? The Orwellian totalitarian New World Order. I mean, you know, it's like the old adage, you know, bend over, put your head between your knees, and kiss your ass goodbye. because that's what's coming. And this guy Dottie, you know, he's pretty well got his finger on the pulse of reality here. He's just kind of reporting, you know, my God, here's where we're at, here's where we're going, here's what these crazies are doing. Can you see the ultimate end of all of this insanity? And I'm saying, well, yes, Mr. Dottie, I've been watching this insanity for many years myself. And I have to agree with you that, yes, I see we're headed toward insanity. Okay, well, now if there's no solution to this insanity, then we don't need to hold this discussion. If there is a solution, if there's something we could be doing that could ease the pain, it's kind of like going out on a big, big night, you know. We all like to drink, we all like to party, we all like to have a good time. My old daddy used to sit me down every once in a while, and he'd explain things to me. So one time he sat me down and he said, son, it's time for you to learn how to drink. I'm about, I don't know, 12, 13 years old. I hadn't left home yet. I'd left home when I was 13, but I was 12, 13 years old. And it's about the time, you know, when kids get to be about 12 or 13 that they want to start smoking. They want to start experimenting with cigarettes. They want to start experimenting with booze. You know, they want to sneak around and drink a little. And they want to lay the neighbor girl in the back parlor or something. You know, kids, you know, they get the hormones start working. And they want to experiment a little bit. Well, my daddy, he wanted to explain to me, he wanted to teach me a few things. And there's a time in life, my dad come along and says, you know, there's a time in life when you got to learn how to drink. I know it's kind of a wild new concept, but kids are either going to learn how to drink at college or they're going to learn how to drink, you know, out at the drive-in with a bunch of pimply-faced punks, or they're going to learn how to drink from their parents. Now, would you rather be a parent and teach your child something about alcohol and smoking and drugs, or do you just let them grow up and kind of ignore it? Well, my dad was the kind of guy who said, well, there's no point in ignoring it. The kid's 12 years old, and he's going to learn how to drink. Either I'm going to teach him or he's going to learn on his own. So he sat me down, and he poured out a drink. And he said, now, when you want a drink, son, you just tell me, and you and I'll come in here, and we'll sit down at the kitchen table, and we'll pour a bottle. My dad drank Four Roses. See, we'll just get a bottle of Four Roses, and we'll have some drinks. And then he looked at me kind of serious, and he said, but if I hear of you going out here with these pimply-faced punks that you travel around with and that you're drinking behind my back, I'll beat you within an inch of your life. Now, drinking from that point on was no big deal to me. The other kids were sneaking around. They were going out to the drive-in, and they were paying other people, you know, extravagant sums to go in and buy their beer, so they go out to the drive-in and drink and drive and so on. I never had to do that. Alcohol was never forbidden to me. You could have all you want. My dad pointed something else out. He said, do you know how much you can drink? And I said, no. And he said, how much do you weigh? And I said, well, I weigh about 125 pounds. I think I weighed 125 pounds. And he said, well, you can drink about 4 ounces. 4 ounces. And he said, by the time you drink 6 or 7 or 8 ounces, you'll be unconscious and under the table. And he said, before long, you're going to be out with those pimply-faced punks. Now, my dad had a label for other teenagers. They were all pimply-faced punks. Well, except for a couple. And he said, they're going to come to you and they're going to say, you know, you're a coward and you can't drink like I can drink. Why, I can drink this whole fifth of whiskey. And he was pointing to this bottle of Four Roses. And he said, son, do you think I could drink that whole bottle of Four Roses? And I said, well, yeah, Dad. I know you're a two-fisted drinking man and I know you can drink, Dad. And my dad said, well, you're right, I could drink it all. Do you think I could survive it? And I said, yeah, you bet, Dad. Why, you bet you could survive it. And he said, no, I couldn't. He said, that alcohol's poison. You drink that bottle of Four Roses, that's a fifth of whiskey. Well, it's actually 4/5 of a quart. He said, that'll kill you. I didn't know that. I was 12 years old. What in hell would I know about binge drinking? Unless somebody explained it to me. Now, hardly a month goes by, or at least a year goes by. Maybe a month is a little bit exaggerated. But you read Reader's Digest about binge drinking, and some kids are out here drinking, and they just drink themselves until they die from it. And they take them to the hospital, and parents are saying, oh, my God, I didn't know my little girl was drinking. You damn fool, it's because you didn't teach her how. You don't teach your children about drugs. You don't teach them about smoking. My dad taught me how to smoke. He said, do you want to smoke? And I said, no, Dad. I'd already been smoking for a while. And he pulled out a Camel cigarette and he said, here. Flipped out a match and he said, let's light up. Well, you know, kids are going to smoke whether you like it or not. And they're either sneaking around behind your back or they're not. I mean, that's just the way life is. Now let's get back over here to Mugombo. The reason I bring this up, and I digress a little bit here, is because, you know, we're in a state of denial. We like to kid ourselves. The economy is just going along. Everything's fine. There's no problems out there. And we're listening to all of these kooks, you know, in colleges and universities telling us, like the Lehrer News Report and Paul Kangas and CNN and Money Watch and all the rest of this crap about how good the world is. That's just horse pucky. Pure and simple. It's horse pucky in the same way that you believe that your children over here aren't into drugs and they're not into alcohol and they're not into smoking and they're not over here practicing free sex. That's what they're learning in the public schools. That's the way they're dumbing them down. Teaching them how to break every known law. Thou shalt not steal. No. Let's take them into college and teach them how to buy stocks and bonds and use unjust weights and balances and steal a little bit more. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Oh, no. Let's teach them about free sex. Let's teach them about alternative lifestyles. Let's teach them in sex education classes. Is it any wonder that Americans then are on the verge of national catastrophe? That's why I'm suggesting to you that you subscribe to, even if you can't afford the $130, at least pick up a free newsletter off of Kitco or somebody over here and listen to somebody that's got some semblance of common sense left. I thought I was the only guy left, but I found out that there's the Mugombo. Now, Mugombo goes on and he says, now, Mike Shedlock, the guy who runs the blog entitled Misha's Global Economic Trend Analysis, gives us another little peek into weird places where normal people do not go. And he puts this little parenthesis in there. It says, WPWNPDNG. What that is, that's weird places where normal people don't go. And he puts this letter in parenthesis here, these letters in parenthesis. That's the trademark of Mugombo. See, when you're reading a newsletter and you see that, you say, oh my God, this is that lunatic fringe from Pinellas Park, Florida. When he reports, now listen to this report, that President Bush is now urging tax credits for home builders. He even provides a quote from President Bush himself, who perversely has said to the National Association of Realtors, to boost housing sales even more, Congress needs to pass my single-family home ownership tax credit. Now, have you heard about this thing called the housing bubble? Have you heard of the unprecedented profits that are being raked up or raked in now by these home builders? Now, excuse me, boys and girls, in the olden days, Lyndon Johnson came to us and he says, oh my God, we've got to increase your taxes and take your money and redistribute it to the poor people in Appalachia. Yeah, okay, well, I could see a little logic behind that. Now, here's our president comes over and he says, listen, boys and girls, we've got to tax you and take your money and redistribute that money to the home builders of America who are making more money, are making bigger profits than any other industry in the country and more money than the contractors and home builders have ever made in history. Did you get that? Now you tell me that the people of the United States of America have not gone insane. It was insane when we got off on this redistribution of wealth, you know, for the poor. Now we're talking about redistribution of wealth for the rich. I mean, hell, if you came to us and said, we've got to raise your taxes and redistribute the wealth and give it to United Airlines and Delta and American Airlines because they're poor and they're not making very much money, wouldn't that make a hell of a lot more sense than taking your tax dollars and giving it to Walmart I thought Walmart was doing all right. Hell, I thought the home builders and realtors were doing pretty well in society. The reports that I get tell me that in California, over the next 20 years, everybody in California is going to be a real estate broker. And the only thing that's going to go on in California is buying and selling real estate. They're just going to buy, sell, and trade real estate among all the real estate brokers, all 31 million of them. That was the last report I saw. And now the president is suggesting that we give welfare to the home builders and real estate associations. Now, boys and girls, this is beyond insanity. Way beyond insanity. And the average Joe Sixpack American not only doesn't know that this is going on, if you told him, he wouldn't give a rat's ass, one way or the other. He doesn't care. The average American came across the Rio Grande River and he's an illegal alien anyway. He's sitting over in the United States in Fat City. He's making more money at minimum wage than he's ever made in his life. He was working for $2 a day down in central Mexico. Now he's getting $5 an hour. And the average American couldn't care less either because he's on welfare. I called a guy the other day. He used to work here from time to time. Big, strapping, healthy young fella. And he's a drug addict, of course, but, you know, aren't all of them. So I said, hey, you want to come over, Dave, and work? No, I'm on full disability. I don't think this guy's 30 years old. He's on full disability. Let me tell you, I live in Ozark County, Missouri. I live 65 miles from Dog Patch. Dog Patch. Do you remember? Al Capp? Little Abner, Dog Patch, I live 65 miles from Dog Patch. The highest status that you can attain here in the Ozarks is total disability. Of which 65% of the people in Ozark County are on total disability. Which just goes to show you, Mr. Magombo, that we're pretty smart people here. We have you taxpayers down there in Florida supporting us. This amazing presidential disconnect with reality comes at the same time as U.S. new home sales jump 12% to a record 1.4 million at seasonally adjusted annual rate in March, which smashed the previous record of 1.3 million homes set in October, and at the exact same time as the median house price rose to $206,000. Do you know that the average house in America costs $206,000? Well, is that because your house is getting bigger and better? Or is it because the money is getting worser and worser and cheaper and cheaper? Has anybody ever been able to figure that out? Well, the median household income is about $50,000, and the median new home now is four times their annual income. And at the same time as the prices of everything else is rising fast, at the same time as incomes are actually stagnating. In fact, we haven't had a real wage increase in the United States in real terms since 1973, and you people are out there buying bigger and better homes, leveraging yourself out for more and more debt. Let me give you this guy's name and number again. He's called the Magombo Guru. You can get a copy of it from Kitco.com. Kitco.com. He actually has an address. He probably sells something. He has to make a living somewhere. I don't know how he does it, but he lives at 9241 54th Street North, Pinellas Park, Florida, 33782. He puts his telephone number down here, so he must want you to call him in at 727-546-5568. That's 727-546-5568. It's called the Magombo Guru. I'm out of time. Besides that, I got class to teach today. Let's see if I can find my closer here. Remember, that's Kitco.com. You're looking for the Magombo Guru. Be sure you get a copy. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, for more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Remember, The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Time's up. Got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, Good night, friends.